Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is September the 9th, 2016. That puts it just 2 days before the 15th anniversary of the terror attacks of 9/11 that cost more than 3,000 innocent people their lives and irrevocably changed the world, and not for the better. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. I worked for that agency for some 30 years. Part of my responsibilities wound up enabling me, if you will, to become involved with terrorism investigations. I've arrested terrorists in my career. I had a front row seat to 9/11, a front row seat to the nexus between immigration and national security. And because of that, I have been, a man on a mission ever since 9/11 to try to provide my perspectives, my experiences to as many Americans as possible and as many of our so-called leaders as possible so that we don't repeat the mistakes of 9/11. But unfortunately, the politicians can't help themselves. I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. As far as I'm concerned, both political parties have become corrupt. You could probably do a successful RICO prosecution on both parties when you look at the money that changes hands, the policies that they promulgate, the laws that they pass but make certain to never hire the agents to enforce the laws. It's all kabuki theater, and it's not without a heavy cost, because every year, thousands of people are killed in America by criminal aliens, people who have no inherent right to be here, people whose presence represents a violation of law. And then you listen to the nitwitted politicians. Gary Johnson, the most recent, went off on a screed about how, during an interview, we should not be using the term illegal immigrant, let alone alien, illegal immigrant, to describe somebody who he said was undocumented and they were simply coming because there was no legal way for them to come here. And he's right. There was no legal way for them to come here, because by coming here, they violated the laws that were enacted to protect national security, protect the lives of Americans, and protect the jobs of American workers. And this is not a left-right issue. It's a right-wrong issue. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent because I hate both parties. I hate this notion that people are elected to represent citizens of this country, and no sooner do they take the oath of office than the political bosses, not unlike Tony Soprano, approach them and tell them, this is the line you will toe or else. And simply stated, you cannot be a slave to two masters. You cannot meet the needs and the expectations of the people who elected you when some thug, which is what these people are, some thug, tells you you're going to vote this way and you're going to vote that way and you're not going to do what your constituents tell you, but you're going to do what we tell you. And anybody who dares defy them winds up without campaign funds to run for re-election, winds up being relegated to ridiculous, worthless committees. And the only way to get where you want to go in politics, with a couple of exceptions, is to become a lapdog to the political hierarchy that does not have the average American's best interests at heart. Period. That is why we are in this mess that we are in. That is why 9/11 happened. That is why illegal aliens can live with impunity in so-called sanctuary cities. I love the term sanctuary. I'm going to sound like George Carlin, but a sanctuary conjures up an image of a place of tranquility, of security, of peace, of warmth. You know, you could almost hear the babbling brooks, and you could almost hear the birds tweeting as they fly through a clear sky. Sanctuary cities, my backside. Sanctuary cities, harbor, shield, aid, abet, encourage, and induce aliens to come to the United States, secure in the knowledge that no matter how they come here, no matter what kind of criminal histories they may have, or criminal or violent intent may have driven them across the border, they will not be challenged about their immigration status by the leaders of the sanctuary cities who don't give a damn what happens to the people that they kill. That is the harsh reality. The immigration laws have nothing to do with bigotry or racism. If they did, I could not have spent 30 years of my life enforcing and administering those laws. It's purely about keeping out criminals and terrorists and spies and human rights violators, war criminals, fugitives, aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, or aliens who have serious mental illness and are violent, or are sex offenders, aliens who might become a public charge or likely to become a public charge, and aliens who, if they worked, would displace American workers and also, as a consequence, drive down the wages of people who were similarly employed. That's what the immigration laws are about. And it was those immigration laws that should have protected America and Americans on 9/11, but didn't. Because the agents didn't have enough colleagues, the budget wasn't there, the resources weren't there, the will to enforce those laws weren't there, and even after 9/11, it's only gotten worse, not better. Only gotten worse. One of the parents of a young man who was killed on 9/11 said to me shortly afterwards, the cost of his son's life, the loss of his son's life, and the loss of those other 3,000-plus people, and it was more than 3,000 when you look at how many people have since died because of the toxins they've been exposed to. We're talking about tens of thousands of people who were sick, whose quality of life went out the window, and that's not even talking about the people who emotionally were traumatized and are still suffering post-traumatic stress and will never be the same. Anybody who was in New York on 9/11 will never be the same. And he said his son's death and the death of all these other people to those bums was simply the cost of doing business. You know, I write for a bunch of websites, Californians for Population Stabilization. I've been with them the longest, capsweb.org. I urge you to go to their website on a rotating basis each and every day. They have fresh articles up on the website, and they cover a wide spectrum of issues that relate to the immigration crisis that we face. And although the name says Californians for Population Stabilization, as goes California, so goes the rest of the country. I write for Front Page Magazine. I write for The Social Contract. In fact, today, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org, posted my article, Lessons Still Unlearned from the Worst Attack on U.S. Since Pearl Harbor. And Front Page Magazine, similar article, Reflections on the 9/11 Vulnerabilities, the failures that proved key factors in the attacks, and how Obama has exacerbated them. Today's program mirrors the reason that I've been doing everything that I've been doing since the towers came down in Manhattan, since the Pentagon was hit, since that plane crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's what this program is about. That's what I am about. I had testified before Congress on May 20th, 1997, on the issue of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because there were two terrorist attacks conducted on American soil in 1993. In January of 1993, Amil Mir Kansi, a Pakistani national, stood outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47. He'd been driving a courier truck. And courier trucks, just like any delivery vehicle or taxi cab or school bus, is ubiquitous. They are almost invisible. When you go to Manhattan, you see so many yellow cabs, it's like looking at a forest and looking at the trees. They're just everywhere. These are vehicles that we don't think anything about. They're just there. It's part of the backdrop. It's normal. There they are. There goes the school buses, and we've seen terrorists drive those or airport limos. Because what the terrorists do is seek to hide in plain sight, to not call attention to themselves. It's like a duck blind where the hunter hides behind a camouflage little shelter so that the ducks don't see him while they're there waiting to pick off the ducks. Well, we, the American people, are the ducks in this shooting gallery. And Cansey, who had a permit to make deliveries to the CIA, pulled into that parking lot that cold January morning, pulled out an AK-47 and opened fire on the vehicles being driven into the compound that morning by CIA officials. He killed two, wounded three others, and fled the country. Because foreign nationals who commit crimes in America have an escape hatch they can disappear through. They go back to their home country, and most often they escape the long arm of the law, but not in the case of Cansey. Our people tracked him down like the dog that he was, dragged him back here, put him on trial, he was found guilty, and he was executed. Goodbye to garbage. But that didn't bring back those he killed. That didn't take away the wounds of those he injured. And 1 month later, January 26, 1993, a bomb went off in the garage of the World Trade Center, killed six people who were just minding their business, going about their lives, going to work another day. Six dead, more than 1,000 injured, more than $500 million in damages inflicted on what had been arguably the most prominent feature in the New York City skyline, the World Trade Center complex. Friends of mine who worked on the explosion told me that it was believed by the engineers who were called in that if the truck had been parked on an opposite wall within the garage, or if the truck had been filled to the top with the explosives that they used, the odds were pretty good that the towers would have come down. The tower would have come down sideways, not both towers, one. And that tower would have collided with the other tower. And nobody would have gotten out because the towers would have come down within seconds. And those buildings were vertical cities, 110 stories tall, nearly a quarter of a mile high. If that had happened, the seawall probably would have ruptured, lower Manhattan would have been flooded, and other buildings would have been taken down by the falling debris of the crashing buildings. I don't even want to imagine what the casualty count would have been. And the Clinton administration knew about it. They knew about the devastation. And instead of saying we're going to tighten up the process by which we admit aliens into the United States, they didn't. The laws changed, but nothing much else changed. They didn't hire more immigration agents. And everybody knew that these aliens committed visa fraud. They lied about claiming political asylum. One guy, Mahmoud Abu Alima, was given amnesty as an agricultural worker, a la Chuck Schumer. Sacred agricultural worker, you know. Don't take away those agricultural workers, folks. And Schumer didn't have a single farm in his entire district. But that didn't matter. Because this was just an excuse to flood America with cheap labor. The Democratic Party, that prided itself in years past of being the party of working Americans, was stabbing the American workers in the back. But don't let that get in the way of anybody. I mean, what the heck? We're expendable. We're just Americans. We watch American corporations day after day fire American workers, and then these companies run to Congress and say, oh, we need more H-1B visas. We have a shortage of workers. And nobody in Congress says, well, wait a minute, didn't you just fire 10,000 people? HP fired thousands. Microsoft fires thousands, Disney World fired 800, and then they say we need more foreign workers. We fired the Americans, now we need to replace them. Is there anything more anti-American than destroying the livelihood of American workers, driving middle-class, hard-working families into poverty, taking from them their ability to support themselves? So we can bring in foreign workers who work for less money and send their proceeds out of the country. We're losing $200 billion-plus every year in remittances, money wired home by foreign workers, and all these brilliant people on these TV shows, and tomorrow's going to be the day for the financial programs. They'll be there scratching their heads, and the dandruff will be flying. Why isn't the economy doing better? Why indeed? more and more foreign workers sending more and more money out of the economy, more and more American workers falling below the poverty line, going from being tax-paying homeowner consumers to people who lose their homes to foreclosure, start to depend on safety net programs that cost a fortune and lose their disposable income. So no matter how tempting the goods or services might be that are being marketed by those corporate thugs, they can't buy these things. And so the economy spirals downward, but to save more money, the thugs of corporations hire more foreign workers and fire more Americans and run to Congress and beg for more H-1B visas. This is lunacy. This is the same as saying that if you find a hole in the bottom of your boat, the best solution is to quickly drill more holes to let the water out. Now, you may laugh at that thought, but that's exactly what they're doing. What they are doing is drilling more holes in the boat that is America. We are losing our country. We are losing our standing in the world. And Americans are winding up in poverty. And instead of saying, wait a minute, we got to fix this, what we're hearing from both parties is let's legalize the people who are here. By the way, we wouldn't have any ability to interview them or conduct field investigations, which, by the way, violates common sense and the findings of the 9/11 Commission. But don't let that stop anybody. You know, I just find it so remarkable, the lies that these people tell, whether it's corporations, whether it's the pundits, whether it's the pollsters, whether it's the so-called journalists. You know, think of what they tell you. We can't deport 11 million people. What are we going to do? How many times have you heard that argument, folks? We can't deport 11 million people. First of all, the number is probably closer to 30 or 40 million, and if it isn't now, it would be if, God forbid, they ever enact comprehensive immigration reform, because there'd be no way of knowing when these people came here. When they run the border, there's no record of entry. They could be here 7 hours and say they've been here 7 years and nobody would be able to disprove it. And the dirty little secrets, and this is why they don't have immigration agents come on TV. You see, after 9/11, I was doing an average of 16 radio shows, television shows per month, 15 to 16 programs per month on average. They never have me or any other immigration officers on anymore. And there's a reason for it. If the story that they're covering is about a homicide, they'll bring in retired detectives and retired FBI profilers. If it's about a kidnapping, it's the same deal. If it's about the spacecraft that's being launched by NASA, they bring in astronauts, astronomers, and engineers. If the story's about cancer, they bring in biochemists and surgeons. If the story's about the military, they bring in former Navy SEALs and generals and colonels. But when the story is about immigration, pollsters, radio talk show hosts, and pundits, and maybe an occasional quote-unquote border sheriff who knows nothing about immigration. Border sheriffs know nothing about immigration. It's a farce. Yes, they wear a badge, but they know nothing about immigration. That wasn't their job. Immigration is a specific area of law enforcement. And if you really want experts, then bring on people who could serve as an expert witness in a trial on the issue. That would be my standard if you're really running an honest-to-God news program. Not some guy that had a wild hair grow up his tailpipes and now he's spewing his wild idea. Bring in real experts, somebody who could go into a court at a trial and be certified as an expert witness. I've done that a number of times. But I doubt anybody you have seen on TV, and when I say a number of times, that's since I left being an agent. As an agent, I was frequently on the witness stand, frequently going before grand juries. The people that are giving these great opinions on TV have no such background. They spew nonsense. Well, if these people have been living here for 7 or 8 years and they've been minding their own business, we won't know how long they've been living here. We will have no way of knowing their identities or their backgrounds or their affiliations. And they would immediately give these people lawful status. This would completely destroy everything. National security goes out the window. Public safety goes out the window. The issue that no one's talking about, but I talk about it, is think of the damage this would do to the schools. Most third world country families have lots of children. So if, let's say, we legalize 30 million, if only a third had kids, we're talking about 10 million kids if it's only one child per alien. If it's two or three or four or five kids, well, you do the math. The schools in America today are struggling to keep up with the workload, struggling to provide quality education to the kids. They are losing money because the tax base is shrinking as the middle class goes the way of the dodo bird. So schools are having to do more with less. And now if Hillary Clinton gets her way, she would give lawful status to tens of millions of illegal aliens, and they would all immediately have the absolute right. There would be no debate about this under the law. They could then bring all their children here and have them go to school. So what happens when suddenly millions of children who can't speak a word of English are being brought into America to attend public schools in the United States? Do you think this will do to the quality of the education that all the politicians promise us? If I'm elected, more jobs, better pay, better schools. Bull. And when it doesn't happen, everyone says, but they promised, but of course they didn't keep their promise. Folks, it's not that they're not keeping their promise. They have no intentions of keeping their promise. It's not like I meant to be there and I wasn't there. You know, we've all had those problems, you know. You tell your husband or you tell your wife, honey, I'm going to pick you up in an hour, and then you get stuck in a traffic jam and you're an hour late. No one says you lied to me. They realize things happen that you couldn't have foreseen. You know, there was a crash on the highway, and we were sitting in traffic for an hour. Okay, it happens. You're late. Everybody should understand that. Circumstances beyond our control. But anybody who can fog a mirror, anybody with a couple of working neurons in their brain, know that if you bring in millions of foreign students, and on top of it, they can't speak English, you will devastate the educational system of the United States. It would be a disaster. It would be a disaster. I was just speaking with a young lady this afternoon who told me that her sister teaches English as a second language. And in her community, they have kids of all ages crammed into a classroom trying desperately to learn English. 10 years old, 12 years old, 15 years old, 16 years old. What kind of chaos are we inviting into America at a time when we're desperately worried about the economy, worried about national security, worried about crime? Gary Johnson, I started out talking about him. Oh, these poor people just want to take jobs. You know, we're exploiting people like crazy. This is modern-day slavery and indentured servitude. But because of so many numbers, the system is overflowing. And because of so many numbers, we have no control who's here. We have a legal system, but the hell with that. Never mind we spend $14 billion a year on customs and border protection. But if people run the border, according to Gary Johnson and according to Hillary Clinton and according to Tim Kaine, her sidekick, they've earned the right to be here. Chuck Schumer made the recommendation that if anyone trespasses on a certified landmark, if anyone trespasses on critical infrastructure, they should make that a federal crime and put those people in a cage for 5 years. But Schumer and Clinton and Gary Johnson have said the same thing. If you come into America illegally, if you trespass on America, well, now you've earned the right to citizenship. Citizenship. And where are the Republicans? Oh, they won't give them citizenship. We'll just give them lawful status. Same difference. If they get lawful status, they're getting official ID, they get driver's licenses, they get Social Security cards, and they get to bring their families here. And where does that leave the average American? When you saw the rioting in St. Louis and the rioting in Baltimore, what you saw were kids. Those kids very often are frustrated, they're angry, they're scared, they can't make an honest dollar. Any contact they've had with law enforcement has probably been an adversarial contact, because kids that can't make money, people who can't make money and need money, will go out and violate the law. That's just reality. That's just reality. And no, I'm not being soft and I'm not playing social worker. It's just reality. If you can't get a job and you need money, you'll do what it takes. Is it right? Of course not. Do they belong in jail? Yes. But what are we doing to address that issue? Firing more Americans and then promising people wage equality by raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour? Who in the world can live on $21,008 a year? That, folks, is what $10.10 an hour works out to in an annual wage. You see, what we're talking about is the engineered destruction of the middle class. And I've written about it for CapsWeb.org. I've written about it for The Social Contract. I've written about it for Front Page Magazine. None of what we are doing as a country makes rational sense. And when Donald Trump comes along, and when Donald Trump says, well, you know, what we really need to do is secure the border and enforce the immigration laws, everybody went haywire and said, oh, my God, this guy is a radical. He was supposed to soften his position. How dare he say all these terrible things? Now, what's remarkable? I testified, as I told you a moment ago, at a hearing that was held by the House Immigration Subcommittee on May 20th, 1997. And the hearing that I testified at was convened because of two terrorist attacks that were conducted in the United States in 93. There were other hearings that were held. And in fact, one of the other hearings that was held was conducted on two days short of the anniversary of the terror attacks of 9/11. And what happened, I'm sorry, of the attacks of 93, 2 days short of the fifth anniversary of the terror attacks of 93. And that hearing was focused on foreign terrorists operating in the United States. Now, what's remarkable about that hearing is they were looking very hard at how those terrorists were able to enter the United States and embed themselves as they went about their deadly preparations. And one of the senators who testified, this was the Senate Judiciary Committee Subcommittee on Terrorism, was Dianne Feinstein. Let me read a quote to you from Dianne Feinstein, and this is in my article for Front Page Magazine, by the way. So please check this out and check out capsweb.org after you listen to my program. And this is Dianne's words. I am also concerned that we need to strengthen further our immigration laws and procedures to counter foreign terrorist operations. I have grave reservations regarding the practice of issuing visas to terrorist-supporting countries and the INS inability to track those who come into the country, either using a student visa or using a fraudulent document through the Visa Waiver Pilot Program. Back then, the Visa Waiver Program was a pilot program. Well, wait a moment. How much does that sound like what Donald Trump said? Dianne Feinstein said, I have grave reservations regarding the practice of issuing visas to terrorist-supporting countries. In other words, if you're a citizen from a country that sponsors terrorism, maybe we shouldn't let you in. No one said anything. Nobody rioted. Nobody protested. Nobody screamed. Nobody yelled. And this was in 1998, 3 years plus before 9/11. And the incentive for this was the bombing of the Trade Center in 93 that killed 6 people and injured more than 1,000. And very properly, Dianne Feinstein said that. And she also talked about this notion of educating people from those very same terror-sponsoring countries and teaching them to become nuclear physicists and biochemists. And she said, you know, we're training people to be able to build weapons of mass destruction. Maybe we should stop doing that also. Common sense. Common sense. I was so proud of the Republicans, and here I am, a registered Democrat, because when George Bush was elected, one of the things that happened after he was elected was he wasn't taking a strong enough position on immigration. When the Department of Homeland Security was created, immigration was split into multiple components. In point of fact, roughly 44 months after 9/11, I found myself testifying at a hearing And the hearing was about where we are now that they've created the Department of Homeland Surrender. What has the impact been on immigration? Richard Stenna was one of the other witnesses at the hearing. Stenna at the time was the head of the unit that dealt with immigration and homeland security over in the GAO, the General Accountability Office. I believe he was with either General Accountability or the Office of Inspector General, but I think it was GAO. But the point was, he was the guy doing the oversight. And he talked about how they were still working on mission statements and priorities 44 months after 9/11. And it blew my mind. It blew my mind. Because at that time, the administration was given enough money to hire 800 new immigration agents, ICE agents, and enough money to hire 2,000 more Border Patrol agents that year and for each of the next four succeeding years. And I didn't think those numbers were big enough. But the Bush administration cut those numbers. 800 new ICE agents became 143 new agents, and the 2,000 Border Patrol agents became 210 agents. And here we are, 44 months after 9/11, and you're listening to this testimony of this guy who's doing oversight. And they said, well, how is it working out? And he's talking about mission statements and priorities, and we're still working on it. And they said, well, what happened to immigration? He said, well, immigration was the only agency in the wake of 9/11 that was actually dismantled and cut into little pieces. And then what was really crazy, and it struck me immediately, and perhaps the parallel didn't immediately hit the other people who participated in the hearing. It took the United States 44 months to win the Second World War. We were attacked December 7, 1941, and by 1945, halfway through that year, the war was over. So here we are sitting at a hearing 44 months after the attacks at 9/11, the same amount of time it took the United States and its allies to defeat the Nazis and declare World War II over. And we still didn't have a mission statement. Think about that. No mission statement. They're still sitting there in Washington cutting out paper dolls. Should we hire 800 new agents? Should we hire 400 agents? Do we need 312 agents? What's the mission statement? What's the priority? And we were still under the threat of terrorism. And if you don't believe it, what happened since? How many more attacks were attempted and actually succeeded? Faisal Shahzad, Times Square bomber, 2010. Tries to set off a car bomb in Times Square. Thank God it didn't go off. It fizzled. But meanwhile, this guy had just been naturalized. You would have thought that a naturalization investigation would have turned something up about this guy's background. There probably was no background because Doris Meisner, who was the commissioner under the Clinton administration, took a shortcut with the naturalization process because she said she was convinced when she became the immigration commissioner that her mission was to try to make everybody into a citizen. So she dispensed with mandatory face-to-face interviews of people seeking citizenship, and meanwhile the law talks about the need to conduct good moral character investigations of aliens seeking citizenship. So forget about good moral character investigation. She didn't even want to be bothered with a face-to-face interview. Citizenship represents the keys to the kingdom. And if you read the articles that I've posted for Front Page Magazine and CapsWeb.org, you'll see examples of how naturalized citizens went on to commit terrible crimes, whether it was espionage, whether it was terrorism. We're handing out the keys to the kingdom, and we can't hand them out fast enough. And 44 months after 9/11, unlike the greatest generation that ended World War II in 44 months, the current crop of idiots in Washington was still working on a mission statement. Can you understand my rage? Are you as angry as I am? I hope you are, because you should be. You know, the current generation of Americans have no idea what America really is. In 1961, when John F. Kennedy said, we're going to the moon. This is over 40 years ago, folks, 45 years ago. We're going to the moon. It was audacious. I mean, imagine that state. We're going to the moon. And we did. And everyone kind of said, well, hell, we're Americans. We could do anything. There's nothing that's beyond our reach. What's mission impossible to the rest of the world, at worst, is mission difficult for us. By the way, I'm getting that wrong. That was more than 50 years ago that he said we're going to the moon. Think about that, 1961. Think of what our technology was then. the computers on board the Apollo spacecraft were the latest and most incredible machinery imaginable. And the computer in your watch is far more powerful than what we used on the Apollo spacecraft. I've had the privilege of meeting so many people in this journey that I've embarked on since 9/11. I've met some of the scientists and engineers who worked on the Apollo program. And they tell you that what they had in the way of a computer was nothing compared to today. But we did it because we were Americans. We were the innovators. It was Americans who broke the sound barrier, Chuck Yeager. It was Americans who launched the first communication satellites. It's America that just orbited a spacecraft around Jupiter again. It was an American spacecraft, New Horizon, that went zipping past Pluto and arrived within a couple of seconds of when it was supposed to get there. They threaded that needle so perfectly. These were American scientists and engineers. But Bill Gates, who has partnered with Hillary Clinton, is out there saying, "We, the world's best and brightest, need to be brought to America." That's a big, fat, juicy, anti-American lie. The best and brightest are here, folks. We call them Americans. It's not about race or religion. It's not about xenophobia or nativism. It's about pride in our country. There isn't anything that America couldn't accomplish if it wanted to. That was then. This is now. Build a fence, secure the border. Oh, how in the world could we do that? We can't deport 11 million people. So here's my question, because people ask me this all the time. They say to me, "Mr. Cutler, what do you do with the 11 million people? Because you can't deport them all. Are you going to be rounding them up?" You know, we heard that from that nitwit Kasich. "Oh, we're not going to leave children on porches screaming." What a statement. What happens in law enforcement when cops don't catch all the people that are speeding or that are drinking and driving or that are texting and driving? What happens when the IRS doesn't catch every tax evader and tax cheat? What happens when police don't grab every shoplifter? Nothing happens. See, laws are only enforced a fraction of a percent. You don't need 100%. In fact, very few laws get more than a fraction of 1% enforcement. Think about that. Speed every time I drive. I'm making a confession here, folks. Yes, I speed. It may be 10 miles over the limit. It might be 5 miles, maybe 7 miles. Technically, I'm speeding. And people are passing me as I'm going 8 miles an hour over the limit on the highway. Are we going to take down the speed signs because we can't stop all the speeders? Of course not. That's absurd. It's one of those ridiculous arguments being used by thieving politicians, forgive the redundancy. It's an excuse. My dog ate my homework and we can't arrest all the illegal aliens. You don't have to. You arrest as many as you can and you tell people if we catch you, you're screwed. It's very simple. This isn't rocket science. With drunk drivers, think what they did. They implemented sobriety checkpoints. They lowered acceptable blood alcohol level. They issue lots of public service announcements. And they ratcheted up the punishment for being caught drunk driving. Right? "We're going to take your car. We're going to take your wallet. We're going to take your license. And we're going to take your freedom. Go ahead. Dare us. And we're going to be out there looking for you. And if we catch you, your world is going to change overnight." That's what they tell you. Has it been effective? You're damn right it's been effective. Texting and driving, same deal. People are convinced that if they pick up the phone while they're driving, SWAT will descend on their car and yank them out by the scruff of their neck. Maybe you'll get away with it, but do you want to be the one to take the chance of getting caught and losing your car and losing your license and paying God knows what in fines? Of course not. But when you have politicians from both parties say, "We can't arrest anybody who gets here, we need to let them stay here," they have rolled out the welcome mat. They have rolled out the welcome mat. And we're told by James Comey, the head of the FBI, we can't vet the Syrian refugees. Mike Steinbeck, the head of counterterrorism for the FBI, said the same thing. John Brennan, the head of the CIA, said that, and he threw in for good measure the fact that it was his understanding, his intelligence, head of the CIA, that ISIS is determined to put among the refugees flooding Europe and the United States ISIS terrorists. And the administration brings in 10,000 terrorists, but not terrorists, I'm sorry, Freudian slip, 10,000 refugees. But if only 1% of that 10,000 are terrorists, you're talking about 100 terrorists. Where does that leave us? 19 terrorists did how much damage on 9/11? What happened in San Bernardino with two terrorists? What happened in Boston with two terrorists? What happened in Paris, France with a handful of terrorists? And when Donald Trump comes out and says, well, we need to screen people. We have no business letting people in who want to kill us. Everybody said, what happened to softening his position? Softening his position. Why didn't anybody say that to Dianne Feinstein? Please understand what's happening. Understand what's happening. And this isn't just speculation. You know, the 9/11 Commission, and I provided testimony to the commission, their staff report, this is written by the attorneys and by the agents who worked for the commission, made the following statement. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So this is the 9/11 Commission. That's why they had the commission, to figure out how to make sure this damn thing didn't happen to us again. And what did they say? Tighten up security. Don't let the bad guys in. And when Donald Trump says it, he's crazy. He's a radical. He's an extremist. What happened to softening his position? Splitting up those poor families? Well, wait a moment. They talk about family reunification. How did the family get divided in the first place? They got divided when people split their families up out of desperation and came to America looking for work. Why? Because there's an oligarchy in Mexico. And that oligarchy wants to keep the Mexican people subservient to them. How do you do that? You treat them like garbage, and then you have to find a country where you could send their young, able-bodied men who would be most likely to storm the gates and demand change. And what's the escape valve? America. So instead of being in Mexico saying, hey, wait a minute, we have the natural resources and we're hardworking and we're willing to do what we have to do to be successful, they export their citizens to the United States. And of course, our employers are thrilled to take them because they can treat them like garbage. They can make them work under dangerous conditions. They can swindle them out of their money. They don't have to pay all kinds of benefits. Obamacare, for one. Think of what this is about. Since when is exploitation a matter of compassion, of being soft, of being caring? Yeah, we're going to treat you like crap, but you're going to make more money here than you could make in Mexico, so they'll put up with it. This is insane. This isn't what America is supposed to be about. America is backing up the oligarchy of Mexico because America is envious of the Mexican oligarchy. Schumer and Greenspan and Gates and Zuckerberg and Hillary Clinton all want to turn America into an oligarchy where you're either super wealthy or super poor. The middle class is where America excelled, but no longer. The middle class is synonymous with a democratic government. People have the freedom to read and pay attention to the facts. Universities have shut down discussion. They have safe areas. God forbid you should say something that doesn't go with what the party jingle is. This isn't liberalism. I've always considered myself a liberal. These are totalitarians. They are fascists. They're fascists. They're totalitarian. Don't tell me they're liberals. They are no more liberal. Oh, my goodness. I don't even know where to go with the analogy. There's nothing liberal about shutting down free discussion. college campuses were always the bastion where debate and open-mindedness was supposed to be the prevalent philosophy. Experiment. Think outside the box. Now they're in the box. So understand what this is about. And it's very clear to anybody who's been paying attention to the issue that this is where the problems are. And what are we doing about it? What in the world are we doing about it? We are actually our own worst enemy. And in fact, here, this came from the 9/11 Commission report. This is chapter 12. Let me read this to you. Before 9/11, no agency of the U.S. government systematically analyzed terrorists' travel strategies. Had they done so, they could have discovered the ways in which the terrorist predecessors to Al-Qaeda had been systematically but detectably exploiting weaknesses at our border security since the early 1990s. This is the 9/11 Commission, folks. We're approaching the 15th anniversary of 9/11. Reading on, this is the 9/11 Commission report. We found that as many as 15 of the 19 hijackers were potentially vulnerable to interception by border authorities. Analyzing their characteristic travel documents and travel patterns could have allowed authorities to intercept 4 to 15 hijackers, and more effective use of information available in the U.S. government databases could have identified up to 3 hijackers. Do you understand what they're saying? The majority of the hijackers should not have been able to enter the United States at all. And then it says, looking back, we can also see that the routine operations of our immigration laws, that is, aspects of those laws not specifically aimed at protecting against terrorism, inevitably shaped Al-Qaeda's planning and opportunities. Because they were deemed to not be bona fide tourists or students as they claimed, 5 conspirators that we know of tried to get visas and failed, and 1 was denied entry by an inspector. We found that had the immigration system set a higher bar for determining whether individuals are or who or what they claim to be, and ensuring routine consequences for violations, it could have potentially excluded, removed, or come into further contact with several hijackers who did not appear to meet terms for admitting short-term visitors. Our investigation showed that 2 systemic weaknesses came together in our border system's inability to contribute to an effective defense against the 9/11 attacks. A lack of well-developed counterterrorism measures as part of border security, and an immigration system not able to deliver on its basic commitments, much less support counterterrorism. These weaknesses have been reduced but are far from being overcome. Well, they were reduced under the Bush administration somewhat, and I'm not sure that I would agree with that optimistic view. I can tell you that under the Obama administration, whatever gains might have been made went out the window. This is so crystal clear. The reason there was a 9/11 commission, ladies and gentlemen, was so that our government wouldn't fall victim to the same nightmare again, so that we don't wind up allowing history to repeat itself, so that we don't have history repeat itself. This is a 9/11 Commission report. What in the world was the point to having a 9/11 Commission if they write a report and our politicians, our leaders, promptly ignore what they were taught? These are the lessons. This was the required reading homework. Think about that. Just think about that. It's just absolutely incredible. There was another section where they talked about how smugglers were known to be working with terror groups to get people across international borders because terrorists have to travel. The 9/11 Commission made the point that in the hands of a terrorist, a passport is a weapon. A passport is a weapon. And what are we doing to stop people from entering the United States? What are we doing to make certain that we don't wind up with another terrorist attack by using immigration the way the 9/11 Commission said we should? We're doing nothing about it. We're doing absolutely nothing about it. How in the world do you reconcile that with the reality that we face? We've had more attacks. We're worried now. There's been warnings that over this weekend there may be more attacks because this is, again, the anniversary, and the terrorists, you know, like to key their stuff off of off the calendar. Benghazi happened on 9/11. You know, here's the point. The government of the United States, if it does nothing else, is supposed to keep America and Americans safe. That's job one, safety first. You can't keep a country safe when you have millions of foreign nationals wandering around your country with no way of knowing who they are. And even the 9/11 Commission left me somewhat disappointed, upset, angry. I don't know. What words should I use, folks? Because they talked about tracking foreign students. No, we don't need to track them. You need to find those who violate the terms of their admission and deport them. Track them? There was an article, and I cited it in my Front Page Magazine article, that 2 years ago they were looking for 58,000 students who went missing. 58,000 students, 6,000 of whom were of particular concern for national security reasons. 6,000 students. We have about 5,000 ICE agents for the whole country, and half of them are doing customs work. An illegal alien has a better chance of buying a winning lottery ticket than getting caught by immigration. And under the Obama administration, unless an alien has committed and been convicted of committing serious crimes, they're not even being arrested by immigration. Sanctuary cities allow people who violate our laws and our borders to live freely under no fear of consequences. In New York City, Mr. Dumb Blasio, the mayor, is providing illegal aliens with municipal identity documents and is now taking the extraordinary measure of going to the banks and saying to the banks, you better accept these IDs as valid. We don't even know what the names are on those IDs, folks. We don't know who these people are. And I guarantee you there is no magical way that Mr. Dumb Blasio's machinery in place has a clue as to who these people are. So be that the case, why in the world would you want a bank to accept non-reliable identity documents? Because when that alien then applies for a credit card or a loan, you want to talk about a bad credit risk? Could you imagine getting a loan and writing your name in crayon on an index card, and they say, who are you? And you say, my name is Charlie Smith, and you hand them a card, and the card is bogus? Well, I don't care how fancy the cards are that the city of New York is issuing to thousands, my understanding is hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. If you don't know who they are in the first place, what's the point to issuing the documents? The 9/11 hijackers in the aggregate used well over 300 false names together. 300. Bad guys. Think about it. When you arrest them, what do you always presume that law enforcement does besides putting handcuffs on them? You fingerprint them and photograph them. Why? To figure out who you've caught. Bad guys use multiple identities. Do you think that the city of New York is able to figure out who somebody is if they're here illegally? And to use the parlance of the open borders anarchists, they are undocumented. They have no documents. That's what undocumented means. As I wrote in a recent article for capsweb.org, think about this. You can't tell a good guy from a bad guy without a scorecard. An alien who is undocumented has no scorecard. So now the mayor has upped the ante in New York City. The city hammered the worst on 9/11. And what is he saying? Tells the banks, you damn well better accept those ID cards that I've issued to those illegal aliens. Very good, Mayor. Help them move money out of the country. Help them get bad loans. And what people didn't talk about after the banks came crumbling down in 2008, thanks to Greenspan, who, by the way, said that we should open up the H-1B visa program to eliminate the wage premium earned by American high-tech workers, the highly skilled. That's what he called for. He said that American workers were being paid a wage premium And if we could get rid of that wage premium by forcing them to compete with foreign workers, we could greatly reduce inequality in wages between those with skills and those with lesser skills. So Greenspan, you know, the mortgages, the subprime mortgages were a big deal. It was his baby. He came up with that scam. But no one's talking about the credit cards. Remember, we used to get credit cards in the mail. Congratulations, you're pre-approved. When you default on a mortgage, at least the bank holds on to the property. They have the land. They have the house. They have something. When you swindle a bank by getting credit cards that you default on, what does the bank hold? Dust. Dust. And I'd love to know how many billions of dollars evaporated when people got credit cards under fake names. Why do you think identity theft is such a big problem? Part of it is because illegal aliens want those identities so they can work, quote-unquote, legally. So even when people say, well, E-Verify is the solution, it's a partial solution. It's a partial solution. We need to also have agents out there conducting the audits and also going after the fraud. Because you have to presume that if you make it impossible for an alien to get a job in the United States if he or she is here illegally, then what's their goal going to be? To get legal status. And how might they do that? Lying about political asylum, which, by the way, the 9/11 Commission said was an embedding tactic of the terrorists, by getting involved in a marriage fraud, which, by the way, the 9/11 Commission said was a tactic of the terrorists. I'm not making this up. So what's the solution to fraud? Well, it's called conduct investigations, just like we saw with tax returns. If people commit tax fraud, what's the solution to tax fraud? You need more auditors. Look, here's something that comes from page 47 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida, and I mentioned him earlier in my program. And then we get to this beauty on page 98. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Think of the Dreamers and then Obama's plan for the DAPA, which luckily was blocked by a court, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. It's crystal clear. We have decisions that we have to make as Americans. Election Day is one of those. We have to consider what Hillary Clinton has promised, perhaps we should say threatened to do. But we also have to be careful about who we vote for where the Senate and House races are concerned. Immigration is the key issue. It impacts virtually every threat, every challenge that we face. We are at crossroads. We live in a perilous era, and our borders and our immigration laws are our first and last line of defense. Let's keep the victims of 9/11 in our thoughts and prayers and their families this coming weekend. And let's make it our business to be good Americans, and by being good Americans, we must be involved in the political process. This is the work all Americans must do, because as I always like to say, democracy is not a spectator sport. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to seeing you again next week, next time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good weekend, everybody. Good night.